Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us today on the show. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call today. My good friend Paul Keels, Kata Bates Diop, right near the wire by a nose.
Buckeyes trailing 63-62. 16 seconds to play. Inbound Tate, center circle. Walks it to the right side of the floor. 12 seconds left. Tate high on the right. Ohio State comes top of the key. Tate against Mathias. 8 seconds left. Tate down the left side of the lane. Tate to the hoop, low on the left. Layup, no good. Tip, no good. It's tipped in right to the rim by Kata Bates Diop with 18 to play.
That was Ronnie Stokes in the background yelling yes. All right, so now Purdue did get, I mean, Dakota Mathias made a fabulous toss down the floor to Isaac Haas. Haas had a decent shot at it. That's not his shot. A turnaround fade. He gave it a run at it, but Ohio State now is the leader in the conference.
Yeah, there was one play that Kata Bates Diop had at the start of that. It was right around the start of that 25-10 run to wrap it up where he's in the air and he's moving backwards toward the backboard, and he flicks it in for a layup. It makes it look so easy.
Yeah, and that's how he's been playing. That's why he is one of the leading candidates for Big Ten Player of the Year this year, because he's been able to do everything. And remember, there's no Cam Williams in their lineup. We don't know how long he's out on his suspension. As always, the word indefinite means nobody knows. That's the way that plays out. Now, that was the basketball part. Now let's get to the wrestling part. Penn State's going to wrestle in the Jordan Center on Saturday night against Iowa. We bring in the outstanding play-by-play voice of Penn State wrestling, Jeff Byers. Jeff, I mean, by my money, that was the best dual meet, most exciting dual meet I've ever witnessed. You have a little bit more experience at this than I do. What did you think?
Yeah, it was. It just had a little bit of everything from Penn State's perspective. Obviously, getting the win made it especially memorable. But it really was just a great dual meet. I thought you had two outstanding teams that matched up well with each other. A lot of kind of toss-up bouts and some very good wrestling. And I just think Penn State fed off of that crowd, and obviously Cale Sanderson made the right moves, obviously at 197 in particular, and I just think it was a very special night for Penn State and really for wrestling in general. I think that's exactly the type of meet you were hoping you'd get with an opportunity to showcase it like that on Saturday night.
Well, you have to make a move there at 197. What were the determining factors that finally convinced them that Anthony Kasark should be the guy?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things, and I don't think they're still settled in terms of, and I know it sounds ridiculous, Kasar just knocked off the number one kid in the country, but I don't think it's definitive right now that Kasar is your starter moving forward. They just have some different styles and can do some different things. But I think what it came to down to with Kasar on Saturday night is just the matchup. Kasar has an excellent race shot. He likes when guys shoot in on him, and then he can reshoot. And Moore is a little more of an aggressive guy in that Ohio State lineup, so I think they like that aspect of it. I also think Kasar is just, he's a very strong 97-pounder, and not that Rashid isn't strong, but Kasar is exceptionally strong for that weight class. And against a guy like Moore, who is powerful, I think they just felt more comfortable with that aspect of his game. And Kasar is also just a little more sound technically right now, where she can do some things that Kassar probably can't in terms of being a dynamic wrestler. But Rashid sometimes, and he'll be the first to tell you, there are some situations where he's not exactly sure which way he should be turning or which way he should be going. Kassar's just got a little more fundamentally sound game. So I think those were kind of the three factors that weighed pretty heavily toward Kassar getting the call, at least against Colin Moore in Ohio State on Saturday.
When they've wrestled off, who's been better?
You know, it's been, they haven't wrestled off per se, Steve, and they really are very competitive in the room. I mean, they're very close. Rashid can do some things, again, with that cradle, even when you know it's coming. It's just very tough to stop. And they're both very athletic, very quick, and really on their feet, they're very even. And they're both tough on top. I would say Kassar maybe has a slight edge on the mat in terms of consistency, but again, Rashid can just hit you from that top position with that cradle at any time, and that's you know, those bonus points, as we've seen over the years, can be a real difference maker in the postseason. So they really are very competitive in the room. My guess would be if they had an actual honest to God wrestle off and they wrestled 10 times, that they'd split at 5-5. I mean, that they are that close and that competitive with one another.
All right, now let's get to Nevels now. He went up against the Olympic champion, and I said on the show Monday, that's the first time in my life where I ever saw Penn State in anything lose and have everybody at Penn State go crazy with joy. All right, but what did he – now, I know – look, let's be realistic here. I mean, for Snyder with his schedule – all right, fatigue somewhere has to come in, because you and I both know what it's like to travel all over the place. Maybe not that distance like he does, but you know that has to enter into it. But what did Nevels do that you thought was impressive that allowed two takedowns to happen on his part and then to hang in when he needed to?
Yeah, the thing I really like, Steve, with the way Nick wrestled is, and he was not satisfied. I mean, I know the Penn State fans, and I was happy with the result as it stood. But, you know, Nick was not satisfied. He really thought going into that he could find a way to win, and still believes that in the postseason he will find a way to beat Snyder. And he does have a tremendous skill set. And I think last year, Nick really let Kyle intimidate him a little bit. He obviously knew the reputation of Snyder, knew what he had accomplished, and I just don't think Nick went out and competed the way he's capable of. And really, that's what we saw Saturday night. I think Nick just went out and decided, you know what, I'm going to try my stuff. I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to try to go toe-to-toe with him and see how things shake out. And you know, Nick's in tremendous shape, and I do think the travel for Snyder caught up with him a little bit. And I also think Kyle took this, I think he took him about for granted a little bit. He was warming up before the match, doing kind of a workout, and I thought it was a little more intense workout than what you'd expect to see before a big dual meet like that. And it just did not look like Snyder had any legs under him in that third period when he needed to try to go for it. And I'm not sure if he did, again, with the way Nick was wrestling, if he necessarily would have gotten it anyway. But I really just think it was a difference in terms of the mindset that Nick approached it with, that he wasn't going out there trying to keep it close. He was going out there and just resting and seeing how far that could get him.
All right. When you look at the matchups with Iowa, what are a couple that just jump out to you right away that become swing matches in this thing, especially with Nolf out?
Yeah, I mean, 49, I obviously are favoring Rutherford, but I'm just interested to see, because Brandon Sorensen did give him a tremendous go in the one meeting last year, and Sorensen is pretty clearly now the number two guy at that weight. So I'm just curious to kind of see where they're at with one another at this stage. I'm not expecting that to be a swing match per se. You're obviously, if you're Penn State, expecting to win it comfortably. But it'll be an interesting match to see, just because Sorensen has scouted Saints so much, and it's obviously the one guy that's been standing in his way here over the last couple of seasons. But, you know, I really think 41 again, and Nick Lee will go in as a more significant favorite against Iowa than he did against Ohio State. But, you know, Penn State, I think, needs to win that with Nolf out of the lineup, but probably should. And really, I think, Steve, that heavyweight match now is very intriguing. If Neville's wrestled the way he's capable of, and I think Saturday night is what I'm talking about, you know, he and Sam Stuhl should be a very, very competitive match. I think both of those guys are capable of finishing as high as third at Nationals and maybe even higher again. I just think Snyder right now is a prohibitive number one, obviously, and I think Adam Kuhn of Michigan has kind of separated himself to this stage. But I think right now Stuhl and Nevels would be in that next group of heavyweights, and that should be a terrific bout, assuming we start at 25 to end the duel here on Saturday night.
Where do you feel Nick Lee is in his progression? Because obviously he's in a spot that where, hey, look, like Mark Hall last year, he's taken the bull by the horns. So where is he?
Yeah, I think I think it's just a matter of maybe learning some situational wrestling, and I think that's what happened Saturday night. He just couldn't afford to get himself tangled up with each other's legs and have that type of time run off, because I really think, I know he feels and the coaches feel like if he had just an opportunity to have 30 seconds to work with and get off a clean shot, that he would have done that and won it.
Right.
But in terms of his development, he's right on schedule or ahead of schedule in terms of his wrestling. It's just, again, and sometimes you just have to go through these matches and kind of see for yourself, oh, okay, this is what we're talking about. So don't let yourself get tangled up in that type of a situation at that stage of a one-point bout. But he's very comfortable, very confident in himself. He realizes what he needs to do differently to change it up. And we saw that with Mark Hall last year. I think that's an apt comparison. Mark had some matches that he let it get away from him, just some situational things that he recognized it, made the adjustments, and obviously had a terrific postseason capped off by the national title.
Exactly. It's the lessons you learn at this point, because I'm with you. I think Lee is a fabulous prospect. When you look at him, you see he's got all the attributes, I think, to be a national champion at some point. Now, when that point is, I don't know. I mean, would that be fair for me to say?
Yeah, he definitely does. The biggest thing, obviously, you need the athleticism and the wrestling acumen, but the biggest thing is the ability to go out with the mindset that you want to dominate. And Nick Lee has that, and he brings it to practice every day. And you see that, and it's much easier to work with a kid who has that mindset and, okay, here or there, let's maybe back off the gas pedal just a little bit, or at least adjust the steering a little bit when we're on the gas. And it's much easier to work with a kid like that than a kid who, even if he has the tools, isn't out there shooting and willing to pull the trigger. That's just a much harder thing to change than just a little technical change here or there. But Nick Lee he has all the tools, as you said. He's just got the quickness, the strength, and he just has that the mindset of a champion.
Did Nevels, you mentioned how disappointed Nick was with how it turned out, and that tells you a lot about him. Did he walk out, though, with more confidence because of how he wrestled against him?
Yeah, I think he definitely did. I think he getting a couple of takedowns, and I can't imagine. Snyder's reputation internationally is that he just doesn't get taken down. He's very hard to score on. So to get two takedowns against him is a huge deal for Nick, and I think really does give him a big shot of confidence here in terms of what he's capable of doing. And again, he'll have another big test against a big heavyweight here at Sam Stuhl on Saturday night. So we'll kind of see if he can use this as a springboard to bigger and better things. But his confidence right now is certainly back. And I think it was wavering a little bit there at the beginning of January. He knew he wasn't doing some things in terms of his training the way he should be, and he's made some adjustments. And I just think right now his wrestling, again, we go back to that attitude. But I just think he's wrestling with the attitude that you need to be successful at this level of collegiate wrestling.
Now, what is this, the sixth Jordan Center dual meet? Does that make sense?
Yeah, under Kale, I think.
Under Kale, right. Kale. And I think they've sold out three of their first five, so this will be four out of six. That sound right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
When you get in there, obviously the intimacy of rec hall. I'll give you the old Gene Cady line. Gene Cady would always tell me whenever I'd interview him before a basketball game, he'd say, "Steve, there are 14 high school gyms bigger than rec hall in Indiana." Okay. So the first game they play in the Jordan Center against Penn State, I said, "Gene, you always told me there were 14 high school gyms in Indiana bigger than Rec Hall." I said, "What do you think of this place? It's more people to hate us." All right, so that was Gene Cady. So what about the Jordan Center factor as opposed to the Rec Hall factor? You've experienced all of it firsthand. What are the pros, and are there at all any cons?
Yeah, the pros from the wrestling standpoint, obviously, Cal wants to get more, give fans more opportunities to see them. And I've actually talked with a handful of folks this week that are excited about it because they just can't get tickets into Rec Hall for the meet. So this is a good opportunity for fans just to be able to see the team that might not otherwise have that chance. And for the kids, they really do look forward to it because they do that raised platform and they do all of the fireworks and the fog machine and the theatrics that go with it, and it just feels like a big deal. And so I think they look forward to it and that opportunity. And obviously, when you get close to 16,000 on their route and you want, it's a tremendous feeling, and you can feel that energy. It is, as you well know, though, Steve, it just does not have the same impact. The fans don't have the same impact at the Jordan Center that they had at Rec Hall. Even when that place was filled, it just does not have the loudness or the intensity that Rec Hall can bring. But it's just a really fun meet to have, and again, the kids, I think, just really look forward to the opportunity, and it's a tremendous show they put on. They've really kind of figured out after the first couple of years exactly what does and doesn't work there in terms of putting on the theatrics for it, and I just think they have it now down to where it really is a great show for the fans. It feels like a big deal for the kids that are competing, and it's just a really cool event that I think everybody looks forward to now each season.
And it is an event, no doubt about it, and that's the best part. You're going to get about 9,000 people into the Jordan Center that would not be able to get into Rec Hall. And I think that's the key to, again, spread. I mean, because a lot of people want to go see this, the best wrestling team in the country. So people want to see them. And
sure.
And that gives them an opportunity. Jeff, always a pleasure. Thanks so much, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Steve.
Jeff Byers, the play-by-play voice of Penn State Wrestling. Tony Knopp, final half hour of today's show as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Ian Rappaport is reporting that former Nittany Lion defensive coordinator and former interim head coach Tom Bradley is going to be hired by the Steelers to be their secondary coach. As Carnell Lake resigned his spot, and it looks like, according to Ian Rappaport, it's going to be Tom Bradley that will get that job with your team.
That is fantastic.
So now already burns his scraps problem. All right, so.
Just what 2-5 needs. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, I don't know if that's what scrap needs. No.
I see where you're coming from there. Because you and I have talked about Artie off air, and it's given me a chance to kind of. There's portions of the game I'll just focus on him and just to see what he has done and what he needs to do just to become a better player.
Well, obviously, Carnell Lake did the same thing and said, "I want out." No, I'm just kidding. Artie Burns is a perfect example of a great athlete playing football. And you have certain guys that are great athletes that translate their athleticism into being really good on-field players. And then there are other guys who are just really great football players. They may not be the greatest athlete, but they have the instincts. They get to the right spot. You see that in any sport. where a guy is just made for a sport. Then you look at a guy like Artie Burns, he probably could play a couple different sports. But he still doesn't quite have the football instinct part down yet. That takes some time. In the NFL, though, they don't give you a lot of time for that. I'll give you an example of a guy that was a great athlete, but also had impeccable instincts. Deion Sanders, one of the best athletes to ever play the game of football, but also had football instincts. He was a great athlete that was also a football player. You know, some guy, like, take Larry Bird. Larry Bird would not be, in any other sport, would not be good at any other sport except basketball. And as a basketball player, absolutely impeccable instincts. He was made for the game. So, all right, Tony Knopp, final half hour, CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. We understand the suit has gone into the fetal position in some corner.
Or left the building, one of the two.
That sounded hopeful. I guess Steve Williams already ripped him for wearing a suit today.
He did. And got thunderous laughter up and down the hall. They said to Steve, I said to Williams, it's like, hey, it's like you work here. It's like you're in the building here every day.
Oh, maybe it was an Olympic fun fact that drove him out. I thought we were doing the right thing.
So far, it's been all accurate. No red flags.
Today's Olympic fun fact was Duke plays North Carolina tonight in basketball.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased now to bring in the outstanding CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, Tony Knopp, for our monthly conversation. Tony, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
My friend, how are you? Congrats on an unbelievable recruiting class.
Yeah, they've really been doing well. The Fiesta Bowl, I thought, was another great springboard for them. So they're set up pretty well here because James Franklin's done that kind of job.
He is. I have some serious envy of Franklin. You know, you have guys out there like Dabo Swinney and Franklin and David Shaw who they don't just win, but they're the kind of guys that you point to your son and you say, hey, that's what a man acts like. And he's just a good guy, and I don't want to play against him.
Yeah. I don't blame you for not wanting the last part, but he is exactly the way you describe him. All right, so it is Olympic time. For some odd reason, you and I will not be entrenched in front of a set watching people walk in. But NBC paid about $1.1 billion for this Olympics. Their advertising is at $900 million, which means it's a $200 million loss. Oh, and that doesn't include the $100 million in free advertising they gave to the Olympic Committee to make everybody feel good about the Olympics. People forget about that part. Is it really worth it taking a bath like this?
Yeah, and here's why. Tokyo, Paris, and Los Angeles. I mean, the reality is, it's like anything else. You're always going to give favors to somebody who gives favors to you. And everybody knows that Pyeongchang is going to be a dud. I mean, we have guys over there right now that have been there and are going to be there for the 3 weeks doing business. And you can start to see a lot of these sponsors and even NBC and the people who are carrying the games saying, look, we're going to start investing now. We're going to start getting ourselves in there now and entrenched now so that we are the incumbent when Tokyo comes. We are the incumbent when Paris comes. And we are the incumbent when Los Angeles comes. And if that means we've got to take a bath on Pyeongchang and Beijing, then so be it.
So in other words, this is like playing the stock market. You're making an investment.
Exactly. That's exactly what they're doing. If you look at the sponsors that are in it now, too, Intel, Bridgestone, some of these other guys who just joined after like a McDonald's and a Coca-Cola and those guys, some of them dropped, that's why, right? They're not looking at Pyeongchang and saying, you know, hey, I really need Bridgestone tires to become, you know, something bigger in South Korea. That's not the goal. The goal is to get entrenched before you go to what are going to be three just massive games. I mean, as we've talked about, the IOC got out over their skis and started doing some corrupt things and awarding games to places like Sochi and, you know, places nobody cared about. Now they started to realize we better go back to our bread and butter, and that's going to be Tokyo, Paris, and Los Angeles.
Right. And those should all be big winners for them, and at least in Los Angeles. Now, I know we're talking 10 years away, but at least in Los Angeles, they can carry stuff live, which the last I checked, since this is the 21st century, that's normally how you do things.
That delay is always going to crush them. And they always line up behind the argument of, well, developing world, we want to have people watching in the developing world, but that's baloney when it comes to the Winter Games, right? There's just not that much growth in those sports in areas where the games are going to be live. And outside of those who are trying to just win medals through state-sponsored Olympic programs like in China. And so, you know, I think they've kind of realized what they've gotten into here. I mean, Pyeongchang's so bad now that our guy on the street is saying they're giving out tickets for free to volunteers with the caveat that you wear street clothes and you stay for the entire event in your seat.
So, in other words, it's like Kramer in the Seinfeld episode where he's a Tony Award seat filler.
Exactly. He's a seat filler. We used to do that in college. It's actually a common thing out here in Los Angeles. You go to the awards and you get to be there free. You just got to move seats 10 times.
That's amazing. All right. I've got to get into the Fox deal with the NFL for Thursday Night Football. Roger Goodell went out and did something, and I give him credit for this. All right, where he increased the rights on Thursday Night Football, which, of course, then ups the salary cap across the board and what teams can spend. Is that any indicator of what of the power the NFL still has, or does it indicate something else?
You know, it's funny. It's hard to tell. You know, a lot of people like to say that the NFL is dying, and every week you get that story that talks about ratings going down and, you know, that sort of thing. But the reality is if you compare their ratings to the ratings of basically anything else on television, they're actually declining a little bit less than most everything else. If you even look at the biggest shows that are out there, the Big Bang Theory and those, they've seen a bigger decline than NFL has, you know, especially Sunday Night Football and the like. I'm going to be curious what they do with the product itself because there is some complaints about the Thursday Night product. But, you know, look, this is just Fox entrenching, maybe seeing a weakness in ESPN, who's had, you know, some turmoil recently, and they're making a bet. Is it the right one? I don't know. You know, the corporate interest in the NFL is still there. People still watch it. They still like it. But as you and I know, you know, participation is way down, especially with the kids. I think by 2025, 2026, I don't know what the story is going to be. And if you look at franchise values, you know, they released the numbers yesterday. The NBA's franchise values are up 22% in the last 5 years. The NFL's are only up 8.
And I want to be fair to the NFL. The top 50 rated shows of 2017, 37 of the 50 were NFL games.
Yes, they dominate. I mean, the reality is, you know, that they're doing very well streaming. There's no real way for us to understand that. The reality is I go to a lot of these conferences where we talk about sports business endlessly, and there's always that one guy who stands up and says, well, the NFL's ratings are so much lower than they were 5 years ago. And it's like, you know, it's just the easy hand raise and say, well, yes, but so is everything else by an even larger margin. It's not the NFL. It's just, you know, cord cutting is happening.
Tony, why has the NBA been a good bet for people?
You know, it's a global game. I think what's interesting about the NBA is nobody noticed when the NBA went global and they did it first and they did it right. They're global interest. You know, it would surprise people to know the jersey sales that happen, like in China, for example, where Kobe Bryant is five times the star he is in the United States. They've just done a wonderful job of creating an environment and creating a digital platform that enables people to digest their games so easily and in such short bursts. So it's one of those things that they made that long play bet. And look, you know, I don't want to dump on anybody, but you have to wonder what hockey was doing that whole time, because if you go back to 1992, when the NBA really started to make a play on the international scene, that's when the Dream Team showed up. You know, hockey was a much bigger world sport than basketball was. They already had a footprint in Russia. They already had a huge footprint in Europe. And they just got lapped three times over.
Well, remember, if it wasn't for the WHA, in all seriousness, if it wasn't for the WHA, the NHL wouldn't have brought any European players over.
No, they absolutely wouldn't have. And then, you know, there was that article, students wouldn't remember this, but there was a Sports Illustrated cover in 1994 that said, is the NHL bigger than the NBA? And it was serious at the time. The NBA was going into a lockout. I think it was a lockout. It was 94 a strike or a lockout? Lockout, right?
Lockout.
And they missed half the season, and the NHL was booming, and they're expanding in all these different markets, and they just dropped the ball.
Yeah. All right. We've used the word a couple of times between the two of us. They've made a bet on this and made a bet on that, which now brings me to the New Jersey case that's before the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
If the Supreme Court rules in favor of New Jersey, which then opens the door for sportsbook outside of Nevada, the NBA has already come up with a plan where they would like to get, and this is based on an Australian plan from the way I understand it, but then it is done in Australia, where they would get 1% of the cut. You and I both know the NFL would then be poised to jump in as well. They already have agreements, and so does Major League Baseball, with FanDuel and with DraftKings and so forth. If this happens, what does that mean for sports, and also what does that mean for your corporate partners?
You know what's funny? For those who haven't experienced it, this is just a very common thing in Europe. I mean, if you are anywhere in England at any time, you can walk down the street to a sports book. I mean, they're literally on almost every street corner in the metropolitan area. You actually...
Right. Roger Federer can bet on himself at Wimbledon.
You can bet on yourself at Wimbledon, and you can actually, at halftime, walk up to the top of your aisle in a number of the soccer stadiums out there and place a bet on what's going to happen in the second half. So it's a very, very common model. It's only in Australia, though, where they're sharing the money. The way they share the money in Europe is they're doing it through sponsorship. They're basically saying, you know, Betfair and PlaceBet and TwoBet, you know, they have shirt sponsorships. So instead of having the Goodyear logo on the cap, you have a betting company's logo. I am really uncomfortable with the Australian model because I just find it near impossible to be gaining revenue from something in which you are supposed to be a third-party objective on. The outcomes of games should not be... I mean, there's already enough conspiracy theory in the NBA. They've already had a referee claim that they've manipulated games one way or another. And anybody with any sense watching the 2002 Kings against the Lakers knows that's what happened. And now they're going to say, well, but we're going to get involved in gambling. I just think that is a super slippery slope. As a gambler, you know, I'm not a big gambler, but if I was, I would be super uncomfortable with that.
And again, these leagues have fought so hard against it for years, but I always made the claim that the second they figured out how to make money from it, they would then get involved in it. And I mean, I've made that claim for about 10 years, and it seems that that's playing out to fruition.
There's money in vice. There always has been, right? Booze and cigarettes and gambling, and you know, they always say it's the recession-proof market is vice. And I think they just waited for it to be normalized enough, you know, worldwide, that it's something that becomes a normal thing. And it'll be interesting what happens with Las Vegas and, you know, with people. And like I said, having the league involved just really doesn't make me comfortable at all. It just, I don't understand why they put that forward. I know that Adam Silver is the one pushing it. And we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening. But I just don't see a world where this doesn't become legal. It's too easy as it is.
But when you've talked with your corporate partners about this along the way that have been so important with everything that you do, what have they thought about it? And does it then expand the corporate footprint because now you can include casinos in this?
Liability is what they're worried about. They are worried that I'll use a simple example that obviously is not true. Steve, you have a really big gambling problem. I may or may not know that. I take you on a junket to a big game that just so happens to have a casino in it, and you lose $20,000. Now you're going to sue my business.
Right.
Right? It's just not – it's a liability that the companies want nothing to do with. They're going to have to create an entirely new audit profile around what you can and can't do at an event. And they're already in the process of that because this big tax cut that or this big tax change that Donald Trump just put into place eliminated the deduction on sports tickets.
I know.
So a lot of these companies now are in trouble because they were writing off a lot of what they were buying, and they can't do it anymore.
So what adjustments do they have to make based on the new tax law?
You know, it's interesting and it's sad, Steve. It's the point of the tax law is to try to get the big brothers to pay more. And they were successful in doing that in some technology. For example, Apple was never bringing any of that money back, and they brought back billions. Now, that has a different effect, though, on sports tickets and entertainment because the big customers we work with, I mean, I've been in these boardrooms for 12 years now, meeting with these guys and girls, and a deduction never comes up at a big company. They're too scared of it. Because if I'm at, you know, Verizon or, you know, Ernst & Young or any of those companies, and I'm looking at this and saying, well, I can deduct it, I can save myself $1 million this year, but if we do it wrong, it's a $20 million fine, and I got to pay lawyers another $20 million, it's just not worth it. They haven't been taking that tax deduction. But the ones who have been these medium and small-sized businesses, the ones who really keep, you know, Penn State and others going because, you know, I'm a mid-sized business. I've got four offices in the area. You know, a third of my marketing budget is supporting the Nittany Lions and then maybe a minor league team or two. And you just cut my budget by 35%. So what the teams are going to do now, it's really interesting. We've been working with, you know, KPMG and EY on this. They're going to start to allocate what you're buying. So if you buy a suite for a game, they're going to say, okay, well, the ticket is $75. Even though the suite, you might be paying $250 overall for your ticket. 75 of that is to watch the sporting event. 80 of that is in dining experiences, and 100 of that is in the privacy that's enabled to you in a suite. And so they're going to try to get it to be able to deduct in that way. And they're going to get creative with sponsorship and say, okay, hey, Steve Jones, insurance company, you want to buy season tickets to the Nittany Lions? I'm not going to sell you just tickets. I'm going to sell you an individual support sponsorship. And, you know, that's going to be $10,000. $5,000 of that's going to be tickets. $5,000 is going to be, we're going to put your name on the board, and we're going to send a couple emails out with your name somewhere on there in a list. Now you can deduct the sponsorship.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to create, and the funny thing about this is what's frightening for these businesses, is they passed the law, so it's in effect, but there's no guidance. And they don't expect the guidance to come until the end of Q2, so July. So all of these teams that are selling stuff right now, they don't even know what the rules are going to be. But they know it's not the way it was.
And again, when it comes to tax law, those who have money have always been, and you know, credit or whatever, have always been creative. That's why so much money has been offshore for such a long period of time.
Right. And the ones who get crushed are the local businesses who've been, you know, who've made this a part of their business. I mean, look, this is, you know, yes, it's fun to go and enjoy the game, but at the same time, I get a lot of real estate business out of the tailgate that I put on. And a lot of people laugh and think, like, that's a boondoggle, but I'd encourage you to go to the community and see it. I'm sure you see it every game.
Absolutely.
It's a business expense, and that business expense is crushing the little guy. And the big guys don't care, right? And I know what the purpose was, but the guys, they weren't taking that deduction anyway.
Okay, 18 months out as you look, what's hot? I know MLS will continue to be hot. What would join it?
Well, Tiger at the Masters, as we talked about, that would be it. If Tiger Woods makes a run at the Masters, you're going to see a $10,000 ticket for Sunday. It's going to be untouchable.
In fact, I talked to Bill Rosinski at the Fiesta Bowl, and Bill does a lot of play-by-play on Golf Channel. He said he looked at Jack and me, and he said, you know what, guys? He says, any tournament he's at, it is a zoo. He says, it's beyond words.
It's a zoo, and if he competes at the Masters. You know what's really making moves internationally is rugby. There's more and more money pouring into it. We're seeing more and more companies get bigger and bigger into it. MasterCard just did a real big deal to get in with the All Blacks, which is kind of the dynasty of the rugby world.
Yes.
But what's interesting is the United States is starting to get some traction. They've been selling out their tournaments because, you know, for those who are like me that don't know much about rugby, there's regular rugby, and then there's what's called the sevens. And the sevens is kind of a faster game with only seven people on the pitch. Well, the sevens are the United States has the best sevens player in the world right now. Who knew? And people are starting to catch on and are starting to sell it. And so, you know, keep an eye on rugby. Especially with
All right, Tony, just one last one before I let you go. McCutcheon, you got Evan Longoria. What the heck are they doing out in San Francisco? And can you challenge the D-backs, the Rockies, and the Dodgers now?
I tell you what, we are well primed to win the 2010 World Series again.
2010.
Apparently, that's what we're doing.
But meanwhile, my team is looking at J.D. Martinez. Just give him the cash. I don't care. Get him and bring him.
Whatever it takes. Back the truck up. I want that kid. It's a young man's game. The Astros, Cubs, Dodgers, they're all proving this. The Giants just went and traded for a bunch of 35-year-olds. I don't know.
You and I both know, all with analytics, they've been able to build this, and it's all young players that they're able to do this with.
And we just, everybody's old. I don't understand it. This used to work. Now, the Giants have done this in the past, and that's how they competed in the early 2000s, but we had Belco working for us. We don't have that anymore.
We'll leave that one stand as is, because you are retiring Barry's number in August, I think. So.
We are retiring Barry's number, that's right.
My friend, always a pleasure. It is great to hear you on the other end. I always look forward to it very much.
I'm looking forward to next time.
The outstanding Tony Knopf, CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. Now, that flies by like that when I'm talking with him. Flies by like that. Meanwhile, in a fetal position in the corner of his office... That could not have been a pleasant conversation for the suit.
No, no. He is gone.
Physically or mentally?
Depends on what time of day it is.
I'm just asking you. I just want to know if he's checked out. I'm checking out. All right. That was a fun one today, wasn't it?
Yeah. Time for us to check out. Your brother's back tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. I know he is.
Basketball picks.
I know.
We'll give it a whirl.
Yeah, we'll give it a whirl. Something tells me he doesn't take it as seriously as the football thing. Yeah, so we'll have some fun with it. Again, our Olympic fun fact tonight. Go ahead. Give it one more whirl.
Of course you remember this. But you may not know this. It's an Olympic fun fact with Kevin Herr on The Steve Jones Show.
Hi, Steve Jones filling in for Kevin Herr. As the opening ceremonies take place tonight, our fun fact for the Olympics is Duke is playing North Carolina in basketball on ESPN. That's our Olympic fun fact. Wrapping up another show. hear the music. John Williams conducting the Boston Pops. Everybody. 1.1 billion dollars. Gone. All right. Well, that. Now, they could have taken 1.1 billion in the center square of the Olympic Village and burned it. What would be more exciting?
That would have made social media.
Yeah, I would have done that. A lot of things make social media. I mean, the vast majority of it's not nonsense, but a lot of things aren't social media. All right. You ready to call it a day?
Yeah, we'll roll for home and get ready for Duke, Carolina.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have watched the opening ceremonies.
That's tomorrow night.
Everybody waving.
Yeah. Figure skating's tonight.
Competition, or just like we're just skating around?
Sounds like it's Paris tonight.
Yeah, but is it real or is it exhibition stuff?
I think it's for real. They dive right in. I figured with figure skating, all the exhibition stuff was after they give the medals out.
I just thought maybe they were opening the rink for a free skate and NBC was showing it.
Well, if they do, we may see Tara Lipinski and Johnny Ware on the ice. So,
well, they can do it. That's for sure.
That's right.
I mean, you know, they're two of the greats. Fun show today. Picks coming up tomorrow. We have to debate whether we're doing another Olympic fun fact tomorrow. Oh, I could probably come up with one every day.
I was going to say, I'll text you a few, but I think you got them covered.
Look, I just ad-lib them. The suit is now pulled over the side of the road and is swearing.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.